Today on Wings, voices from the Zimbabwe diaspora.
Do you know that the diaspora pays $20 billion annually into Zimbabwe? We matter. We matter. And what I get from my fellow Zimbabweans is this spirit of survival in me.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Zimbabwe is one of many countries where political struggles create a diaspora, people and families who have moved away but retain interest in their country of origin. Violet Ganda fled Zimbabwe as a young journalist, targeted for protesting another journalist's arrest. She went on to cover Zimbabwe politics from exile for more than 15 years. After the death of longtime President Robert Mugabe, she returned to Zimbabwe in time to moderate the town hall-style election debates. But after the election, harassment and threats caused her to return to the UK. Ganda's signature program, The Hot Seat, originated as a shortwave radio broadcast, then moved to internet, and now she has revived it as a podcast, broadening its scope to include more of Africa and the African diaspora. Her guest on episode 1 was another member of Zimbabwe's diaspora.
Tandiwe Newton, a primetime Emmy Award-winning actress, joins us today on the program Hot Seat with me, your host, Violet Ganda. The Hollywood star, who is currently the cover of the UK Vogue magazine, has enthralled us in many romantic movies and high-octane dramas, including Beloved, Good Deeds, Mission Impossible 2, and is currently starring in the HBO science fiction series Westworld. Tandiwe has also been using her social media platforms to champion human rights causes in Zimbabwe, and many welcome her powerful voice. Welcome, Tandiwe.
Oh, Violet, thank you, my love. It's so, so good to be here with you. My mother is from Zimbabwe, originally from Jombe, and she trained in England, trained to be a nurse, and she did go back to Zimbabwe but got a posting in Lusaka. My father is British, and my mother and father met in Lusaka. My father was a laboratory technician, my mother was a midwife. They were married there. I was born on a trip back to London, and then they returned to Lusaka, where my sister and brother were born. My sister unfortunately didn't make it, but my brother. And then we continued to live in Zambia for a few years until Herbert Chitepo was assassinated, and he was a friend of my family's. And there was a lot of unrest, and they didn't want to leave, but they decided they would leave for a short while. And when unrest started to really turn into quite serious struggle in Zambia, my parents decided to let politics run its course. And unfortunately, they never returned to Zambia. We settled in England after that.
I think I also saw that you're from Manicaland.
Yes, that's where my family originated.
Oh, so you're my home girl.
I feel like it already. One of your colleagues is called Tandiwe, and her daughter is Tandiwe. So I feel very, very at home.
That's nice. Actually, she's my sister-in-law, and so that was my niece you saw.
Family.
Lovely, isn't it?
The name Tandiwe means a lot to Tandiwe Newton. She once lost her name and had to claim it back.
Because I'm not changing my name, I'm restoring it. And so many people have shared their stories with me as a result of this Vogue article, of being erased, of your culture being erased when you enter a new host environment. You know, I've heard about people who arrived from China and they were given names. I've met people who don't even know what their name is because of their westernized name. And you may, of course, they've all made their names their own. But if you think about how effective a tool that is for erasing the culture where you come from, to even take your name away, And for me, it happened easily and simply. I was very shy about my name when I was a child because it was so different to everyone else's. People called me Tandy, not Tandyway, because Tandyway was such a mouthful. And also Tandy people pronounced wrongly. They'd say Thandy all the time, or they just say it wrong. And it was just so punishing for me. I felt so, talk about being an outsider anyway. And so it was almost like a compromise that people would call me Tandy. And then as I got older and more confident, I would secretly, Tandyway, just the romantic, it's such a beautiful name. It means beloved. It speaks to me about my mother's family and, you know, Shona. And even though it's not a Shona word, it's actually from Zulu, the name, which was also so incredibly romantic and gorgeous. And it kept me attached to my history. So I was still Tandyway to a few. And then I remember when I made my first movie, I was 16 years old. It was in Australia. It was a complete fluke. I wasn't planning to be an actress at all. I was a dancer and studying hard to just be accepted into life. And I did this movie in Australia, and the director had named the character a Hebrew name, even though it was an African. I realize now in retrospect that he knew so little about modern Africa. It's almost pathetic. But he knew I was called Tandyway, and he was so like, oh God, what a beautiful name. And it's also authentic. So in order to make his character and his writing more authentic, he took my name and he called the character Tandyway. And I was so flattered that anybody would even, it was the opposite to what I dealt with normally, where people were like, what, how do you say it? What name's that? You know, horrible crap. He was like, ooh, what's that? Because he was appropriating. That's cultural appropriation. But I was just so jazzed that it wasn't something that was going to be a problem. So he used my name. But then in the credits to the movie, they used the name that everyone called me, which was Tandy, just, you know, which was easy. So that stuck forevermore. My name was no longer Tandyway. It was Tandy. And it was, you know, you don't get to be in a movie that often, do you? So obviously, like, oh, suddenly my whole identity was wrapped around this incredible thing. I'm in a movie, because I didn't think I'd ever be in another movie. It was a total fluke. And so only now as an adult, you know, for years and years, I was worried that if I reverted to Tandyway, I would lose all my fans who only know me as Tandy. But now as a grown woman, and I'm sure that you might, Violet, understand what I mean. You get to an age where I don't need to have this fame around me. People are going to find my work. People can't possibly know me if I'm on a screen. It's the work that I'm offering, you know, and then I get to have my name back.
On Wings, you're listening to excerpts from an hour-long podcast with host Violet Ganda and guest Tandyway Newton. Skipping ahead.
What challenges have you faced as a woman of color in the film industry and also with the media representation of women?
Intersectionality is a term coined by a dear friend of mine, Kimberly Crenshaw, who is a professor of law in America. And she coined the hashtag say her name, something that's very important to me, looking at police violence against women of color in America. Anyway, but Kimberly coined the term intersectionality. And in a way, it was such a relief that an academic pinpointed the challenges faced particularly by women of color. And I've been an actress in film for over 30 years now. And whatever difficulties and challenges there are, I faced them. And I was very aware of from the beginning, which is why, thankfully, I didn't internalize shame around the color of my skin. I did not. If I realized that someone was treating me in a disrespectful way and it was to do with the color of my skin, I would immediately disregard that person because I felt that they were my subordinate in terms of their mental capacity. Because race, if you consider it for any degree of time, is a complete fabrication, which is a hangover from colonialism as a way of making the colonists and the colonized as different to each other as possible so that it could justify brutal behavior. And we're not in that. We're no longer masters and servants in this world, right? But so why are we still using these terms which were only relevant at a time when you had masters and servants. And the only reason why it's still there is to have most citizens fighting with each other so that they're not concentrating on what's happening in the higher echelons of society where deals are being done and pieces are being moved around that board, which we have no idea. We're too busy hating on each other because of this fabrication called race. So I came from that place of not seeing really race. And I think my mother, who is Zimbabwean, she found herself in an isolated part of England, Cornwall, way down the bottom of the country. There were no people of color, no people of color, except her and her offspring. She was hyper aware that ignorance unchecked can obviously turn into racism. And racism is where it gets really dangerous. Because if you call it racism and race, the whole term race is an illusion. It means there's no way of checking whether it's valid or not, because it's not real. It's even an illusion that we manage to heal or do anything about it. If you call it what it is, which are ignorance or hate crimes, you know where you are and you know how to deal with it.
You know, some Zimbabweans might not know much about your work, the blockbuster movies that you've starred in, and that in the critically acclaimed series Westworld, you play a robot that regains its memories of its past life.
Yeah. Funnily enough, just before Westworld, I had managed to extricate myself from a project which I was so heartbroken over because of its sexism and casual racism. And I had talked to the producer about it. I had tried to make changes within, but when I realized that none of that was going to happen, I managed to remove myself from a long-term contract, which really does take a lot of courage. And I was frightened, but I managed to do that because of those things. And then I wasn't planning on working. I had a new baby. I have three children now. I wanted to write. I was frustrated by always saying other people's words. Sometimes that would be okay and it would align with my own ideas about things, but more often it wouldn't. So it was always frustrating. And that's what I decided to do. And then Westworld came along and I was just so surprised by how radical it was, you know, to literally take themes of misogyny and violence and ethnic hatred and subvert them so that we can actually comment on why humanity does that. And the way we do it is by using hosts, robots, as metaphors for the dispossessed in the world. So I played this robot and it was one of the most cathartic experiences of my life. I felt like as an activist, a political rights activist for human rights, every day when I was working on that show, I was an activist. Through the story of Maeve in Westworld, where she starts to break down and to remember a past which has been denied her. Now, at this point in my life, as a woman who is both from Zimbabwe and from the UK through my parents, as an actress of color, I've realized that I've been lied to again and again and again about who I am, about my authority in the world, my power. And I've been lied to by the stories that we're told. I've been lied to by the own stories that I've participated in telling. But when I was working on Westworld, for the first time, because this character, through the information that she remembers about her own life, she realizes who she is. And then in an effort to gain her freedom, she knows that she needs to discover the truth of everything. And that's really it. Once you know the truth, how you're going to deal with the situation is up to you. Once you're liberated by truth, you might not even want to retaliate. I mean, that's the thing that I found so stunning in the work I've done across the world. You know, when I'm in the field as a human rights activist with people who've suffered the most horrific human rights, all they want is peace. They don't want anyone to be killed in response. I mean, by and large, that is. They just want peace and for it not to happen to anyone else. They want to move on. So that's how I felt, you know, with Westworld. I felt like I was every day engaged in the pursuit of trying to free the oppressed. The robots in the show are a metaphor, as I said, for the oppressed. And from then on, I realized I'm not an actress for hire anymore. I do things because I really want to, because it gives me the sense of purpose in my life that I would have even if I wasn't hired, right? And I have a very different attitude to paying it forward. What I even do with my earnings for things, you know, call it generosity if you like, but everything that I am comes from these powerful women in Zimbabwe, powerful women, my ancestors from Congo. I did my DNA test and it turns out before Zimbabwe, my family was in Congo, which makes a lot of sense because I do a lot of work in Congo. And that's who I honor. So actually my life is now really about trying to discover truth and share tools, psychological tools, and also tools for dealing with breaking down the system that disenfranchises so many people. And what I get from that, what benefits me, I make sure that I am uplifting those in the part of the world that have literally given me life.
In recent months, you have become very vocal about the human rights situation in Zimbabwe. What triggered this?
What triggered it? The violence. I've known about the violence surrounding political issues for a long time. I'll tell you what it was. When I first went to Cambridge all those years ago, I had a reading list, and the top of the reading list for an anthropology student was Tsitsi Dangarembga's Nervous Conditions. I read that book 30 years ago. Changed my life. It connected me to Zimbabwe in a very new way because it was a modern telling of modern women, modern family, you know. And then, so when I saw that Tsitsi had been arrested when she was on a peaceful demonstration and put into prison, what? What's happening? And that's when I couldn't turn away. I wanted to help Tsitsi first. That was what began. Her voice, look, a writer's voice, people who comment on society, whether it's journalists, whether it's anthropologists, whether it's, you know, all of us can, of course, but people whose role is to create safe places by speaking the truth about where they're from, we have to protect. And I obviously felt a real kinship too. And then Hopewell Chinono. And then the three girls, Joanna Mamombe, who were abducted and who were found weeks later dumped on the side of a road, who had experienced concussions, had very hazy memories of what had happened, were traumatized. And to see pictures, and then to be told that these pictures weren't real, and to be told that what they were saying wasn't truthful. And I've worked for 20 years in the field as a human rights activist, focusing on women and girls. And we believe women. We start there. Whoever abducted and dumped these women 2 weeks later on the side of the road, if that isn't the government, then surely the government wants to know who's doing it. Why would someone talk about something as shameful as being abducted and sexually abused? Who wants that as an identity? I'll tell you what, no, you don't. I was sexually abused. It's really hard to talk about it. The only reason I talked about it is because I didn't want it to happen to other people. It was a sacrifice on my part because you become, it's like you're stained, right? Mm. You're an example of the bad things that can happen. So keep the bad things away. I would even be dismissed by people, other women, other actresses in my field. So you believe women, that's where we start. So my compassion and my horror, and I'm a human rights activist. Why should I stop being a human rights activist when I look at Zimbabwe? When I'm engaged with in work in Zimbabwe, it's with organizations that do amazing work on the ground, but I never make a big show of it because I don't want it to seem political. I know people say everything's political, but it isn't about politics for me. Mm-hmm. This is about a lot of young people being abused by a system in place or being abused and we don't even know who's doing it. I just want to know who's doing this. And they have to stop. Because here's the thing. Whoever is doing that, whoever abducted and dumped these women 2 weeks later on the side of the road, if that isn't the government, then surely the government wants to know who's doing it.
On Wings, you are listening to excerpts from an hour-long podcast with host Violet Gonda and guest Tandiwe Newton. Both have roots in Zimbabwe, but live in the UK. Members of the diaspora cannot vote in Zimbabwe, but can lend support and influence. Violet Gonda does so as a journalist who covers voices and issues that may not be heard on media produced inside Zimbabwe. Tandiwe Newton stars in the HBO series Westworld and uses her fame and money to help support people in Zimbabwe.
It's good that a celebrity of your stature is involved. But then the next question is, then what? Are you just raising the issues, generally advocating, or beyond highlighting the issues, what in your view needs to be done?
Well, I'm one person, although I recognize that one person can do so much. It's not just Twittering. I speak to those three women's lawyers. I find out how I can help. I have also been looking at other nonprofits, organizations that have been springing up through Zimbabwe, trying to deal with the problems there, like the in Chikungwiza, a soup kitchen, which I interviewed Samantha, the woman who runs it, who started it a year ago. She had a handful of people, that friends of hers, that would come over, and now she feeds up to 3,000 people a day. I started off donating, and then I suddenly realized, it was actually my mother said, oh, we must tell people in different parts of Zimbabwe, we must let everybody know, because it's just incredible that this is possible. And I thought, well, my goodness, I should use my social platform to just spread the word. And not just for people who maybe want to kindly donate, but just to be aware.
Yeah.
Look what's going on. Look at this incredible woman. Look what one person can do, and maybe it will inspire another person to help with something else. Of course, it would be great if the government can do everything, but that's obviously not the situation. You know, this is, I want to stay in joy, Violet. I want to stay in a state of positivity, because here's one thing. When you have been oppressed, one of the worst things that happens is you internalize that and you become your own worst enemy. You start to give up. And there's one thing I've noticed about Zimbabweans. They don't give up. My family there, you know, we always hearing about issues and electricity being turned off and no petrol and not even maybe able to use the Zimbabwean dollar anymore. You know, where can I get, you know, look, the diaspora in the world. I'm talking to you now, diaspora. You know what my mum's been doing for the last 30 years, what I do, sending those, if you know anyone going to Zim, you give them a suitcase full of stuff, take it to give to family and friends. Do you know that the diaspora pays $20 billion annually into Zimbabwe? We matter. We matter. And what I get from my fellow Zimbabweans is this spirit of survival in me. It's in my mother. I see it every day in her. It is the Zimbabwean in me. And now I know that. It's not just focusing on these horrifying, mysterious crimes. It's also recognizing that people are managing to survive. They're not waiting to be told what to do. They're not waiting for handouts. You know, and they're the people I want to help. You know, and I'm very well connected, doing a lot of work for years. I'm on the board of an incredible organization called VIDE, which has been working in Zimbabwe for years and years, as well as all over the world. So these tentacles go far. So yeah, I am one person, but it's not just about tweeting. It's about being involved, staying aware. That's the other thing, which is why social media is amazing. Because it means you can stay aware. There's really no excuse anymore, is there, about being ignorant?
When you talk about Zimbabwe to your Hollywood friends, what is their knowledge? Is it an issue that can gain traction?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. I don't live in America. I'm here now because I'm shooting Westworld, and it is a home from home in many ways. But I am a British person. I don't engage with Hollywood over Zimbabwe, no. I mean, I engage with Hollywood over the way women of color are treated. But one thing I'm aware of is that people are scared to, this is what people are frightened of. People are frightened of losing their popularity. That's what it is. I have been so unpopular for speaking out against sexual violence, both in the industry and I've been unpopular for that. So I'm glad to be unpopular because now turns out you're popular for talking out about. Do you see what I mean? In the space of 20 years, I've gone from being unpopular to, so for me, it doesn't matter. Popularity is bullshit.
Perhaps Westworld should go to Zimbabwe. what do you think about something that can go in a script somewhere to highlight situation in Zimbabwe?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We've been to Shogun World. We've been to War World. Obviously, these different worlds that are created in the show, they're theme parks, okay? So I dread to think what Africa World would look like, okay? Would it be the kind of like Disney Lion King version of Africa? Like, we don't need that. But I have thought to myself, how can we bring Africa more into Westworld? How? You know, I wish we could. We have to have ideas about what is right and what we can do before we actually then try and get there.
What about the role of the international community? Do you think America, for example, is doing good for the people of Zimbabwe via its so-called targeted sanctions? Because it's divided the society in Zimbabwe.
No, I'm sure it has. I'm sure it has because, you know, we're also talking about how Zimbabwe, like the rest of Africa, has been treated by the, you know, the rest of the world. Mugabe, he gained independence for Zimbabwe. It's a huge, and that comes at a price. And it feels like in terms of big scale thinking, everything that's happening now is almost sort of shifting it away from this fight with colonialism, and it's now looking more internally. I just think the change is going to come from underneath. It's going to come from the countries. It's going to come from Zimbabwe itself. It's not going to come from trying to project or send in troops or look what's going on around the world. You send in troops from another country, that doesn't create trust within the host community. Please, no more violence. That's it.
Violet and Tandiwe talked for more than an hour. Among issues they covered in more detail were a video documentary about the 2018 presidential race in Zimbabwe and its Danish director, Camilla Nielsen. Also, fond memories and hopes for their beloved country. You can find this entire interview in video format on the website violetgonda.co.uk. For more information or to hear this program again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose series of Zoom salons can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.